commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 12.
Remixing classical music to mimic dying robot lolcats.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And this week we have some interesting news and a likely very useless main segment. But, you know, we'll be optimistic.
We're always optimistic.
Always optimistic, totally.
I'm smiling hugely right now, just in case you can't tell.
All right, so why don't we dive right into news? This is one you found, Jen, so why don't you tell us about it?
I did. Apparently, Michigan State University Professor Charles Ofria and his colleagues have created a computer world called Avida, which contains digital creatures made up of coded instructions instead of DNA that have evolved to develop memory, which obviously is super spiffy. I mean, they're doing it as probably, in one sense, a way just to be creative computer science people, but as a way to study evolution, in that the possibility that the way that a digital life form evolves could be similar to how we evolved.
Yeah.
And obviously, things like memory didn't happen in one step in the evolutionary ladder. It would have evolved, and that's what they found, is that these little critters they don't take much space and they have short generations, but they have evolved traits, new traits, to outcompete rivals.
Right.
And
right.
One of those is memory.
Right. And this was in response to food, because they built a little thing where they weren't allowed to leave this one area, and it had only a limited amount of food in it. And then they had this other area that was right next to it that they eventually figure out that there's a whole lot of food over there. And so the way that it had worked was that eventually these little creatures had begun to figure out, well, if we head that direction, we can figure out how to get over there. And that's how they developed the memory, is they started remembering that if I head that direction, there's more food over there.
Exactly.
And that's basically what it was. It's a food response. And they built this whole little thing where this whole enclosure of, this digital enclosure of these creatures that had very limited basic responses. They had, they had the same basic responses that we do, to food and all of that. And so this is actually really, really cool that they actually had developed an intelligence of memory.
Right. Well, particularly since the food is what allows them to reproduce. So much like humans and other creatures, all living life, that was kind of a double negative. Never mind. Anyway, like all life, we need food to not only survive, but to reproduce. And this is exactly what these guys are doing. They are finding food. They are then able to replicate themselves faster and more of them, just based on getting more processing power, which is what the food is.
Right.
So, I'm super excited that they're able to study evolution through digital means.
Me too. And this is just more evidence that I think what Robert J. Sawyer was doing with his collection of books, his trilogy of books, that where the internet becomes alive or self-aware. And it seems like if this is possible with very simple coded critters, then you just think what would happen. What happens when you have the internet where literally coded things can just go wherever the hell they want, and they can suck information from anything?
Right. No, it's actually pretty, I don't know how common it is in science fiction, but there have been a few books that have posited that essentially viruses can take on a life of their own.
Right.
It's how we conjecture AI will become life, is by developing intelligence and creative responses, right, and memory and things like that. So, yeah, very exciting. And I'm sure we'll have a science fiction novel about it sometime soon.
Yes, I'm going to write it.
Excellent.
Right now, tonight. I'm going to write a 120,000 science fiction novel about this tonight.
A 120,000 word science fiction novel?
Okay. What did I say?
Just a 120,000 science fiction novel.
Which
made
I should
it sound like
S
you were
going to
write 120,000 science fiction novels, which would have been kind of spiffy.
It would be impressive. It'd be about a novel a minute.
Exactly. You would have stopped time to do it.
I would have. I'm that good. What can I say? Anyway, so since that actually leads us kind of into our next news item, which is science fiction related. It's the Sci-Fi Channel, with the Y's because they're idiots, has released or announced what they're developing for their next sort of group of, I guess, scripted television shows, projects, whatever that they're working on. It seems like a lot of them are television shows, but maybe a bunch of them are movies. I kind of didn't pay that close attention to that. But anyway, so they've released the news about 7 new things that are coming our way. Some of them sound really, really cool, and some of them not so much.
So much, yeah, exactly. So first up, we've got Ball and Chain, in which a couple who are about to call it quits on their relationship get struck by extraordinary powers when a meteorite hits the ground somewhere near them. And they only work when they're in close proximity to each other. And so they have to deal with, you know, being superpowered and deal with each other and deal with forces that are threatening to destroy the world and things like that.
So it's kind of like a really stupider version than Hancock.
Yeah, that was stupid enough as it was.
Yeah, because they get more powerful when they're near each other.
Right, exactly. So
if you haven't seen the end, you know that there's another one. We're just ruining the movie for you, so whatever.
Please. It ruined itself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This just sounds dumb. Like, it's just, I don't know if I get, is it a movie or is it a TV show?
It'll be a TV show, so.
That just, I can't imagine watching that for more than one episode.
I enjoy relationship drama that, you know, two people who hate each other but don't hate each other and have to deal with each other. I enjoy that to an extent, but I don't think I'd want to watch it week after week.
Yeah, no.
Because they're going to be the main, but that's what it's going to be about, essentially. Yeah, there's going to be other stuff on the sides, but yeah, not interested. So up next
is Me and Lee, which is actually one that I'm only moderately interested in. It's basically, there are two shows that Sci-Fi is doing in which they're having the shows be kind of about real science fiction people, like the actors, not the characters they play.
Not real science fiction people.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I mean, this one, Me and Lee, is actually involves Lee Majors. There's a down on his luck 20-something or whatever who undergoes some sort of a surgery that doesn't go very well. And then Lee Majors comes in and says he's got a perfect solution and takes him back to his lab to turn him into this bionic thing, which makes sense because, you know, Lee Majors as
the bionic man.
Yes, he was a $6 million man, wasn't he?
Is he six? Well, whatever. Same thing.
He's a bionic man. You know what I mean? Yeah, $6 million man. Anyway, so it's Lee Majors actually having the technology to do the things that he played in a TV show from a long time ago.
Yes.
Which sounds, I mean, it sounds really stupid, and it'll probably
not be stupid.
It's going to be dumb. I just imagine it's going to be really dumb, but at the same time, maybe it'll be really funny.
It might be. I mean, and Lee Majors, I loved $6 Million Man, and I have to admit. So, and he has always been slightly amusing in guest starring roles and things like that, so maybe it'll work, but
yeah.
I just don't see it happening.
And it should be noted that Sci-Fi is not the studio for these productions.
These are all
made by external studios. The Ball and Chain is by Universal Cable Productions and Fremantle Media. Me and Lee is by Lionsgate. And the next one we're talking about, which is Orion, is actually by Universal Cable Productions again.
Right.
Which, as far as I know, is not owned by Sci-Fi, but I've never heard of Universal Cable Productions, so I don't know what that is.
Who knows? We'll
but anyway, so it. Orion is actually, they describe it as National Treasure meets Firefly. It's like swashbuckling space opera.
I have to admit, I'm excited about this one.
It's
going to have a heroine. So, I mean, yes. You get an adventurous female relic hunter and her team as they hunt down and sometimes steal valuable and powerful objects to sell on the black market. Yay! So the reason I'm excited about this is because one of my favorite characters in Stargate was the kind of relic hunting thief character. I don't remember her name, but she was hilarious. And I'm hoping that they'll kind of bring that sort of awesomeness to this show. Plus, it's National Treasure and meeting Firefly.
Which sounds kind of fun, yeah.
It totally does.
I would, but depending on what the show is like, you could also maybe somewhat describe it as a little Doctor Who, just because...
Oh, totally.
There's a little bit of that in Doctor Who, too. It's kind of like, yeah, it's... I don't know, it sounds kind of fun. I hope it's good, but, you know, I have to be a little bit withdrawn, because...
Yeah. You don't like TV, so...
I don't like most TV, and I don't like almost anything sci-fi has done.
Except that they're... Well, two of their three television shows right now are actually really good, so... Who knows?
There's only one good show on that whole station, and that was Battlestar Galactica.
Ugh, whatever. Actually, no, they've got 3 out of 4 good shows. Whatever. Stargate Universe is cool.
Oh, but no, I like Stargate Universe, actually. That's not bad.
I love it. Eureka is hilarious and has continued to be every season, and then Warehouse 13 is fantastic. I'm still iffy on Haven right now, but...
I don't really care about that.
I'm waiting for Haven to get big, but we'll see.
It will.
Anyway. Up next is Sherwood. Robin Hood story for the 23rd century.
Which is basically just Robin Hood, but with spaceships.
Yeah.
Which, the description just sounds really boring.
Yeah. I do love Robin Hood stories, so... I
mean, maybe they could make it work, but it's just like the description right now, like, why would I watch that?
I have no idea why you would watch it.
Unless, like, I just really
like
was
Robin
obsessed.
Hood? And guess, you like 23rd century updates of Robin Hood?
I guess. Well, there isn't a lot to even go on for that one. We didn't even know what it's about, really, other than that. It's from My Plastic Badgers Productions, which is, I don't know who they are.
I like the name, but
apparently Amanda Tapping is executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. All right.
The woman who was in Stargate?
I think so.
Stargate and then Sanctuary?
Hold on, I can double check.
Yeah, it totally is.
It is? Did
and
you get
I
that
like
recorded?
Her.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, you're faster than I am.
I know I am.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway, so next up is actually one that I am strangely really excited about for no logical reason whatsoever.
Nerd.
It's called Legendary. It is going to include Kevin Sorbo, who is playing an exaggerated version of himself as a former syndicated television series star, and then a fan approaches him to enlist his skills in combating the underworld mythological creatures that threaten to destroy Los Angeles, and then they make a pact together and fight monsters. Which, it's totally ridiculous, but it's Kevin Sorbo, which he is already ridiculous. He's freaking Hercules.
It is, and honestly, stars doing things about themselves, you know, John Klein Van Damme's JCVD, which was, for whatever reason, critically acclaimed. It's actually been working, that sort of making fun of yourself thing, or exploring your own life. So, I don't know, it might work.
It better work, because this is going to be hilarious. It's Kevin Sorbo, man. Hercu-frickin'-lees.
I know.
That's right.
And the fact that they're using the Hercules myths and their intimate knowledge of it to fight... I mean, yes, it's...
Well, he plays an exaggerated version of himself, so he's going to play, at the height of his career.
No, I don't think it'll even necessarily be at the height of his career, but even if it's not, it'll be... Yeah, it is a hilarious... Hilarious.
It'll
premise,
be great.
So
it's gonna be the most amazing thing ever.
I hope so for your sake.
Me too. Yeah.
All right. Next we have Human Relations, which this one sounds interesting to me. Because The Office is hilarious. So, and this one is supposed to be sort of The Office meets Men in Black. Mm-hmm. So it's an office temp who slowly discovers that his off-kilter and oddball bosses at the strange high-tech ad agency where he works are really aliens working on a plan to destroy the Earth. It sounds a bit like the Hulu commercials.
What Hulu commercials?
The Hulu commercials that were on last year where, Baldwin.
Oh, right.
Where they're aliens and they're...
trying to suck out your brains. So.
Yeah.
And an ad agency could totally work for that.
I was interested in it right up until it's the aliens trying to take over the world. That was kind of like,
Watched V.
Yeah, there's a difference, okay? I already knew what V was. This is supposed to be original. It's cool, right? Like, the idea of, like, The Office meets Men in Black. You know, like, that's, like, a cool idea. Because, like, Men in Black is... It never gets into that sort of office side. But, like, it's kind of like, what if the guys who, like, work at the office at Men in Black that deal with immigration, like, what are those guys' lives like? Like, they don't get all the action-packed fun stuff. They get eaten and spit on and have weird alien fruit offloaded into their laps. Like, you know.
Yeah, that was an interesting tangent you just had there.
I'm just saying, that's what the show could be about. It could be about alien fruit.
It could be like, you know, like an incoming, like a port. That might be an interesting show. Like, you know, a spaceport in which they have to deal with the weird imports and exports. Mostly imports, you know. Like
immigrate
alien fruit.
Immigration Earth. You could have a show called Immigration Earth.
Totally. It would be Ellis Earth.
Well, it wouldn't be like that. It wouldn't be like Ellis Earth. It would just be like American Border Patrol, but with aliens.
That was Men in Black.
Yeah, but the difference is like they actually have to go through immigration, whereas in Men in Black, they just hunt people down and like find them. I'm not talking about like
Men in Black. They were an immigration service too.
They did, yeah, but that's what I was just talking about though, is the idea that, you know, we don't really get to pay attention to the guys who deal with the incoming. We deal with the guys who are hunting down the guys that break the law.
That's true.
You know, which is more exciting. But I mean, if you did like a web series, like, I don't know, like 10 episodes, like, or 15 minute episodes where it's just like a comedy situation of some weird crap happening at the alien immigration center.
Right. That might be interesting.
I'm writing it. Nobody can steal that idea.
We're good at that. All right, so the last one on the list is Zeros, and it's going to be a half-hour satire about the zombie extermination and removal operation company, who are called in to keep the peace when the zombie population outside the city overcomes the barrier and comes in and starts infecting people. So yeah, a zombie show, which... hopefully will be good. A zombie satire as opposed to the very serious new AMC show Walking Dead. So,
which looks dumb.
No, it doesn't. You just don't like it because you think it's ripping off 28 Days Later. But the truth is that it was written before 28 Days Later.
I know,
so,
but
booyah.
The problem is there is nothing about that show that is even remotely interesting to me as a zombie aficionado. Like, because I've seen everything that they're doing in that show has already been done 36 times in movies already. It doesn't matter if it was before all those movies, if it preceded all of those. I've seen all of those movies. So this show doesn't offer me anything interesting. It doesn't do anything.
You're a dork.
You're a dork.
You're a dork.
I'm revoking your card, man.
All right, so it turns out Universal Cable Productions is actually the... part is actually Sci-Fi. So.
Oh, well then anything by Universal Cable Productions.
Sci-Fi is owned by NBC Universal Cable. So.
Wait, no. Oh, hold on. Is Universal Cable an NBC or is it under Sci-Fi with Sci-Fi under NBC?
I think it's NBC. Universal Cable is under NBC, which is over Sci-Fi.
Okay, then that's totally different. Right. Totally different. Because this means that Universal Cable is coming to Sci-Fi to sell a program.
No, NBC owns Universal Cable, which owns Sci-Fi. Whatever.
It doesn't matter. Whatever.
Also oversee a bunch of different other networks, so who knows. Anyway, so yeah, those are the new shows. And hopefully they'll be, like I said, I'm enjoying Haven, Eureka, Warehouse 13, and Stargate Universe, so... hopefully we'll get some more quality programming from Sci-Fi.
Yeah, well, only half of those have a shot.
Yeah, at most.
At best. Yeah, at best have a shot. But of that half, maybe one will actually be worth watching.
Exactly.
And that's a maybe. That's a big maybe.
Big, gigantic
maybe. Even though they sound nice, it's Sci-Fi and they'll mess it up.
They are very good at that, yes.
They'll turn one of them into, like, Piranha 3. It'll be Kevin Sorbo and mutant piranhas in space.
That sounds very exciting to me.
Yeah, but it won't be, because they'll do something evil with it. I can't think of a good joke. So, you just can't have to deal with, like, a really crappy segue to something that's book-related.
Yay, books!
Yay. So, Google, which is the most evil corporation ever invented by something as cool as the internet, unfortunately, Google has managed to figure out how many books have been printed or published in the history of mankind.
Modern history.
Modern history. In all of modern history. Well, when does that period start? Do they say?
I have no idea. Presumably.
It's not within the last 30 to 40 years. It couldn't have been.
No.
It must have been stuff that precedes ISBNs. So.
Yes.
I don't know what modern history means, but whatever. Look, they figured out how many damn books have been published, and the number is 129,864,880.
That's a lot of books.
A lot of books is an understatement. That's like saying, you know, like the gulags in Russia were just kind of bad. Like, this isn't a lot of books. This is like, there's no way you can say how many books that is in a single phrase without involving curse words.
Really? You just said how many books that was, and you didn't involve any curse words?
Yeah, but that doesn't, that without saying the number.
Oh, I see.
You don't say the number. If you need, like, a phrase, like, you
that's
know,
like, true. Like, that's a lot of blank books.
Blanking books, you mean. Well, let's get the grammar correct.
Right, exactly.
Use your adjectives,
so,
child.
I'm kind of curious, though. Out of that nearly 130 million books, how many are science fiction and fantasy? Because I'm going to make it my lifelong quest to read every single one of those books.
Well, the problem is there's no way you could tell, because half of the books that were written in the pulp in the Golden Age could be either fantasy or sci-fi.
That's true.
Because you got, like, books where they have, like, robots flying on dragons, and it's like, what? Which one is it? I don't understand. How do we get... That's why they don't usually split them in bookstores, because, like, can you imagine the headache? Like, the poor guy who would have to, like, your job is you have to figure out what all these are and then put them in the right sections. Like, his head would explode after an hour of that.
Totally. I wonder how much space 129,864,880 books would take up.
More than the Library of Congress, which is, I think, the largest library in the world.
And how many books do they have?
Not that many. But that's because the Library of Congress doesn't carry most self-published books.
Oh, well, they don't count anyway.
Yeah. I can find out, though, Library of Congress. How
I've many
books they have.
The collection of more than 130 million items.
Items.
29 million catalog books and other print materials.
There you go. Yeah, because they would have movies, the microfilm, and stuff like that, yeah.
There are actually 142 million books at the Library of Congress.
Yeah, which means they have multiple copies. By the way, that...
No. What I'm saying, though, is... Oh, yeah, so would... if they have 142 million books, then they could theoretically hold 129 million books.
Okay.
So that's how much space 129 million books would take up. Approximately as much space as the Library of Congress.
Wow.
See? I answered my own question.
There we go. That's good. And by the way, that 129 million, the 130 million that Google says, those don't include reprints of books.
Right.
And they don't include, like, the number of books that exist, because there's even more, like, the number of copies that have been printed. This is just individual titles that exist. 130 million individual titles.
Which is freaking awesome.
That is crazy.
Yes.
Are there that many movies?
No.
That's what
there
I thought. So books has
not
got
by
you
a
down.
Long shot.
Yeah. Mm.
Totally.
Take that.
Books rule the world.
They do. We could build a house out of this. In fact, they did. There's the thing.
They did, and it's a very nice house.
It's a very creepy
without
house.
Rooms.
I'm not sure how it would work. It's kind of creepy, actually. I wouldn't want to live in a house made of books. It kind of worries me. But
well,
I'm weird.
It could burn down easily.
Yeah, that's my concern. And I live in Florida. We get struck by lightning, and then the book glue would melt from the bindings, and then I would like, boil
plus it would
in
get it. Wet, and I'd feel sorry for the books.
Well, we would just use self-published books by...
Oh, then that's okay.
Yeah, that's actually very mean. Let me rephrase. We will use really bad self-published books that have poor grammar and Twilight.
But that's... Oh, totally. Exactly.
And you would just need, like... You can make a whole house just out of the Twilight books, so...
We'll steal them from all the twits of the world. And a house out of Twilight books. Every copy printed. It could be a really big house, too. And then we'll burn it down.
You could have a mansion, and you could build... I don't know about that. I was going to say build bookshelves out of Twilight books, but then I realized that would be almost like...
It's just wrong.
Almost like burning books to survive nuclear winter.
Yeah.
Which...
I would, however, happily burn down my Twilight house.
Okay, but that's different. We're okay with that. But that would be the primary reason why I think Day After Tomorrow is one of the worst movies ever. Because they burn books, which I think you should actually be locked up in prison for.
Yes.
And not like federal cushy prison. I'm talking like Rikers Island, like butt-raping prison. Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's where you should go if you burn books.
Okay, then! Yeah, Moving on.
Yeah. Alrighty, so we're going to go to the music, which will be perfect for your book-burning time in prison. Because it'll give you that perfect nice little beat and everything. This is so wrong. Anyway, so we're going to come back with our segment, which is going to be on stuff. So we'll be back. All right, bye. And we're back with our main segment. This week we've decided to talk a little bit about fantasy, since we've been very science fiction heavy lately. And last week especially. Yeah, well, whatever, shut up.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Anyway, so this week we're actually going to talk about ubiquitous fantasy. I like that word, ubiquitous.
This was inspired by Garth Nix, who said in a recent interview why he thought that fantasy was making a comeback. And in his opinion, obviously, it's impossible to work out why fantasy has become so attractive to readers. The one theory I have heard is that it is a reaction to the technological world we now live in. We seek out the wonderful and mysterious in fiction. And that intrigued me, that concept, that idea of, you know, because we live in this technologically super fast-paced world, that we would need to be spoon-fed our fantasy. Because that's essentially what he's saying.
Yeah, I don't think that has so much to do with it.
You don't think that's why it's making a comeback?
Well, first off, if it's making a comeback, it's been doing that for a very long time. Because fantasy's not... I mean, there was a point when fantasy was fairly small compared to science fiction.
Right.
But, like, the rise of fantasy, it's not like that just happened within the last 5 years. That's been a fairly big rise over the last 15, 20 years.
Right.
You know, that's been something that's been going on. There have been these massive titles that have been around for even longer than those years, but even in the last 20 years, there have been huge titles that have shown up. Series that have been running for... How long has the Robert Jordan series been going? That's been going for forever.
Too long?
I haven't read them, so, but I wouldn't know. But I know... But it's been going for a while, anyway, though.
Yes,
right?
It has been since the, I'd say, early 90s. So.
Okay. So, I mean, you had that, and that's clearly very popular. It's not like that just became popular. No, that's been popular for a while. He sold over 44 million books in total. Right. So, you know, it's not like it's a new development. I don't remember where I was going with that.
It's not a new development, the fact that it is... making a comeback is kind of a misnomer.
Right, it's not so much making a comeback.
It never so much failed in the first place.
Well, I mean, there was a point when fantasy was in a position even worse than what people are saying science fiction is in now, which is like almost nobody was buying it. It was just kind of literary trash and garbage, at least in the perception of people. there was a point when it was like that, when it was just nothing. It was just trash. And then that changed, and it became a little bit more powerful, and now it's even more powerful. But I think he's wrong when he says that it has to do with the rise in technology, because if this sort of comeback has been going on for the last 20 years, that means that its rise into popularity again has less to do with technological advancement than with something else. Because, I mean, when you think about it, like, the internet did not become what we think of it now until really the, I don't know, what, early 2000s, like 2002, 2003?
Yeah, pretty much.
Somewhere where we came to a point where it wasn't just like we were using it to play video games and to send emails, but like to where literally internet culture became like you could spend your life online.
But like, very mainstream. Yeah, I mean, to an extent that might be true, but I suppose if you were to track the rise in technology being as ubiquitous as it is in our lives, I just had to use it, now as compared to what it was in, say, let's go with 1985, which is, I got my first computer in like 83, 84 or something like that, because we were early adopters, so to speak. But my family's also, we've always read fantasies. But I suppose if you were to track it from the point in time when it was an early adoption, computers weren't in every home, which didn't happen until the, you know, late 80s, early 90s even, and then to the point where it's at now, where computers and, you know, Blackberries and everything else is so much a part of our lives. I suppose, you know, there has been a trend upwards in fantasy over that same time, but is there a correlation? I mean, Garth Nix obviously says that there is. I don't know. I mean, is that why Harry Potter is popular? Is that why Twilight, as crappy as it is popular?
No, well, you gotta also got to remember that Harry Potter became popular not so much just, like, not in the same way that, like, say, Robert Jordan became popular. Harry Potter was hitting a market that was there but had not really grown to where it is now, which is that young adult market.
Right.
Or children's lit. I don't know what Harry Potter. I think Harry Potter was originally written for kids, or they were selling it to like younger kids, but then it became like really dark, and so it was for adults. Like, I don't know, whatever. But like, I think that really pushed fantasy too, and that's also not something that I think has anything to do with the rise in technology. I think that just has.
I think just, that has to for do some with reason, the untapped market to an extent of children who have now grown up with fantasy being a part of their lives. And continue to be fans of fantasy. Mm-hmm. So that in itself, I mean, what year did the first Harry Potter book come out?
Late 90s? 99?
Right. So
somewhere around there, yeah.
Well, let me think. My niece is now something like 22 years old. She saw the first movie when she was 13. So 9 years ago. But the movie didn't come out until after the books, obviously. The first film. So yeah, something like 98, 99.
Yeah, so somewhere about there. Yeah. So I mean, it's been around, so most of the people who began reading that are now likely in their mid-20s, depending on how old they were when they first read it. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And I'm sorry, that was my cousin I was talking about, not my niece. I'm not that old. Anyway. Yeah, so she's grown up with it. She's now in the book-buying market as a 22-year-old, you know. She's old enough to buy her own stuff. She has been for 10 years, but, and she probably, I don't know if she still likes fantasy, but she still certainly likes Harry Potter, so I'd have to ask her, and now I'm going to, because I'm really curious. Did her love of Harry Potter translate into a love for other types of fantasy?
I would imagine it would, I mean, to some extent.
Right, exactly.
And that wasn't what it was for me, but I know.
Right.
I know for a lot of other people's, it was. I don't know. It's very interesting because we're all just making guesses about what it is that actually made it work, but they're all just that. They're just guesses.
Yeah, and I think there is some credence to the fact that we live in a highly technological world, but could also just be that movies picked up, at least with Harry Potter, half the reason that's as popular as it is because of the films.
Oh, no.
You don't think so?
Oh, no. No, it was popular before the films. I mean, I'm sure the films helped it a little bit, but it was already big.
It was still, yeah, you're right. It was a bestseller by that point, so.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so,
it was
knows?
Not just a bestseller. It was like a, the kind of bestseller that makes best-selling authors feel bad about themselves.
That's a very good point.
It was getting the kinds of sales figures that people who, that just, yeah, I mean, if you're, when you're making best-selling authors feel suicidal that they can't achieve that, then you know you've got something.
That's true. So I asked my daughters, because I was curious, I was like, okay, well, if fantasy is so popular, and the probably one of the biggest markets, I mean, granted, you've got urban fantasy, but one of the largest markets for fantasy at this point is children. And there are a ton of series that are long, 20, 30, 40 book series for young readers. And so I was like, okay, girls, I can't bring you on the show yet, but I'm going to talk about you. Why do you like fantasy? And Jess immediately said, unicorns and dragons and fairies. And I was like, okay, well, that makes sense, I suppose. You're girls, so yeah, unicorns, dragons, fairies. What little girl doesn't like those things?
I don't.
Little boys just go for dragons. Anyway, and then Mo said, because it has all the cool stuff in it. And I was like, thinking about that, I was like, okay, yeah, but these are two girls that really enjoy science fiction films. They like robots. They like zombies. You know, they, mm-hmm. in film, seem to be attracted to those things that are more associated with science fiction. But in their books and what they read, they are still very much only interested in the fantasy realms. That's what they're reading. They like their elves, they like their dragons, they like their unicorns, they like their fairies, and all those other wonderful magical things. And is it just that as children, we are more accepting of magic?
Yeah.
I mean, is that really just why? And as children, we're just not as interested in reality?
Well, I think that does. That definitely plays something. Well, I think it has to do with, where did I read this? I read this somewhere just recently, and it's not a new idea. It's an idea that's existed for a while, but I'm pretty sure I read this from somebody who talked to us. But it's the idea that, like, children are at that point in their lives where they're it was Carl Sagan. That's who it was. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a book of interviews by Carl Sagan right now. And he said that a lot of the problem with why kids didn't go into science, at least during his era, was that parents, you know, the kids were allowed, they ask questions, you know, yada, yada, yada. But there comes a point when parents start to sort of knock down the questions or give them the answers. And so they get to that point where you start getting all of the answers and there's no reason to explore anymore. And I think that's kind of like part of that for kids. It's like, well, when you're a kid, you're at that point where you're, you know, you can explore. You don't realize yet that, oh, well, all of this is a load of baloney. Like, you right. do, but you don't, but, like, you're willing to still, like, I mean, kids aren't dumb. They know, like, fantasy books are not, I mean, there are no real unicorns. Well, I mean, maybe if you're, like, five, but, you know, your kids are probably old enough. They know unicorns don't exist, but.
Oh, yeah.
But they're still at that point where, like, their minds are still wanting to explore and see and imagine things that, I guess adults sort of get to a point where, generally speaking, we don't.
Right, except that then as adults, there's the idea, at least for the fantasy genre, that we want to return to some sort of, not utopian, but pastoral youth, where we had access to that part of our imaginations, where we were willing to explore the magic and to believe in it. So.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true for some adults, but I mean, yeah. The fact that even just the fantasy and science fiction only makes that market only makes up, what, like 6.3% of the total book sales market?
Seven point something, I think.
Is it 7 point something? Whatever it is, yeah. it's fairly small compared to the genres that are the largest, which, you know, is right. like romance and then whatever else. I can't remember what is the largest. Is there something bigger
romance is the largest.
The largest fiction genre.
No, I think the largest genre, period.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if it's the largest genre, but it has nothing on that.
Right.
So, I mean, I imagine so many people who don't read fantasy, there are probably numerous reasons, but I'm sure a lot of them also have that view or that, or have some way that's sort of internalized that they don't want that, like that's sort of childish. You know, I can't go back to being a kid and like imagining imaginary people and, you know, thinking about this stuff because that's like all childish nonsense, which I think is total BS. Be a kid all you freaking want to be.
Right, I agree. Say. But, you know, I really, to an extent, I really do kind of agree with Garth Nix. You know, fantasy novels tend to be to somehow inhabit a slightly slower paced world. Where things seem simpler, whether or not they are. You know, they could still have complicated relationships and complicated political machinations going on, but in and of itself, they seem to exist in worlds that are less complicated, you know, where you go out and milk your own cow sort of thing. and magic nothing solves everything. No, there is nothing simple about milking a cow, cows. But people who exist within the modern realm of computers and technology and news streaming at us from every which direction, going into that slower pace of a fantasy world is very attractive. And
it's not attractive for me. I don't want to milk my cows.
Well,
I build a robot to do that for me.
I mean, it's the same thing as the people who are constitutionalists. They all want to be Puritans again, you know. Same sort of idea, except that some people don't take it to that extreme. Some people are just perfectly content reading a fantasy novel that seems to inhabit a slower world but doesn't actually force you to be slower.
Yeah Well,
I don't know if it makes sense, but whatever.
I guess on some level it makes sense, but I don't know. I just disagree that that's necessarily directly connected to the technological. I don't know
well,
that
technology
it is.
Has made it, made our lives faster to an extent, you know.
Well, I mean, I guess, but see, like, well, but the speed
fine,
of
I'm
that is, the speed, though, has negative consequences. Because, I mean, for the most part, a lot of the technology does. You get the speed and you have the quality. But then, particularly with the internet, which now I'm going to rail against the internet, you guys just have to deal with this. The reality is like the internet, it gives you speed of access to information or speed of access to things that you maybe need for whatever reason, but the quality, the quicker that becomes to get, the quality drops drastically.
Drops. Well, you know? Then you're forced to parse the information in a much more critical manner in order to get the stuff out, which still means that a ton of information is getting thrown at you, but then your brain is also having to work at it harder because it's not as simple as just picking up a newspaper and reading an article and going, oh, that's true, and then moving on with your life. Now you're bombarded by so many different stories and so many different sides that you have to go through that information.
The problem is most people aren't willing to.
I know, most people
that's
aren't
the problem.
Willing to.
They become secure in the world that they are, in which anything they read from sources they quote-unquote think are credible are, you know, even though they're not, they take that at
face value.
They just, oh, it's good to go. I don't need to do any further research, whereas that wasn't the case before. That's not how things like journalism worked. That wasn't how, you know, not at least not if you wanted to be taken seriously. You couldn't pull some of the stuff that gets done on the internet without losing your job, because you would get fired. You'd be considered a hack. And yet the stuff that goes on right now, I mean, the stuff, like, if 30 years ago someone had done what they just did to Shirley Sherrod,
oh, yeah.
You know, whether or not her statements, you want to take those as problematic. They are, but the fact of the matter is what happened with the Shirley Sherrod case is, regardless of what you feel about the NAACP or Shirley Sherrod or Andrew Breitbart, somebody took a video clip from the video that was intentionally clipped so that it took out all of the context of the situation, and then they played that, and Andrew Breitbart took that and went away with it. Whether or not he was responsible for the cutting, I don't know. That's not information I have. I don't think anybody knows yet. If it was, that's even worse. But the fact of the matter is that that's the problem. Yeah, it's a tangent. Bite me. She's writing to me on Skype right now. It's about a tangent. But that's the issue, though, is with our technological age that this kind of stuff, you couldn't have got away with this 30 years ago. If you had done this on whatever were the major news networks at the time, I'm assuming some of them are the same ones now, but I don't remember Fox News, how new that is.
Well, no, because you can't really go with the major news networks were more trustworthy somehow back then. They weren't. They were probably less so than they are now. Now you have actual, other people either backing them up or going, you're totally wrong. Whereas you had less of that when there were fewer because they had essentially monopolies on information. So, but still.
But you wouldn't have got away with this because if you got away with doing this.
But what does that have to do with the rise of fantasy?
Well, you got onto a tangent on the whole technology thing about how somehow technology has made our lives so much faster. And I think the problem is we've gotten so secure in that speed of all of the other things, the things that actually work, that now we aren't taking the moment to realize that we can't work at speed on what is now becoming the digital age.
More people need to sit down and read a fantasy novel and let their minds slow down.
Or they could let their minds slow down on the internet and not be like the people on YouTube who spend all day are making arguments about how insert political figure is Hitler's sister.
Right, they could do that.
They could, not do that, or they could maybe read a book about real things.
Or fantasy. Or
read a fantasy book. Yeah, whatever. Whatever, they could do that. Maybe fantasy makes people calm down. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why fantasy is so much bigger. Because all these people are just really mad because they're just like, everything's so fast and like people say stuff that's not true and I can't handle it. So I'm going to read something that isn't true. As if it's real. So take that, the man. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's not what it's about?
No, I don't think that's what it's about.
Oh, well, I like that version better. Because at least it makes us like, it's revolutionary, reading fantasy. It's like reading Marxist manifesto thingy in your bathroom at college.
That's what reading fantasy is?
Sure. I don't know. Whatever.
I suppose.
I don't know.
The reason I say that I think other people are probably a little bit like me. Part of the reason I do like fantasy is because it does have the illusion of being less complicated. When you read science fiction, it's very much, it's extrapolations of reality, right? It's speculations about reality. Yeah. It's supposed to be about our futures.
Yeah.
And occasionally that's just depressing. And particularly when you're in the middle of a recession, do you really want that?
Yes.
I mean, I do sometimes, but not all the time. I need the fantasy in order to, like I said, slow down and just kind of relax and enjoy. It's escapist. Yes.
Yeah,
but I'm okay with that.
Just so you know, when the recession first hit, sales of dystopia style science fiction went up.
Right, which is curious, and I believe I remarked on that in one of the previous episodes, but I don't remember what I said. So,
I bet you there's some sort of way you could use Freud or Lacan to like analyze like our desire for misery.
I'm sure.
I could do that, but I won't because Lacan scares the hell out of me. So.
And I'm not that smart, so I won't.
Yeah, so, I think the most interesting thing about fantasy is, the question now is, well, how much longer can it do this? Can it stay at the top of its game like it is now, or is it going to reach that, the housing bubble point, where at some point it's just going to pop and everything's going to fall? Because right now, fantasy's doing good. I mean, it's got urban fantasy, paranormal romance, it's got the actual, epic fantasy styles, all the various versions. It's hitting all of the right buttons now. Now it's giving us all these like assassin books and like cool ninja guys in cloaks running around and Prince of Persia-ing everybody. So can it keep this up?
I think that they can keep it up for a while, only because they're tapping into that young market that has grown up with fantasy being so much a part of their life, for one thing. For another thing, like romance, like I said, I think is the largest genre. But because you have urban fantasy and paranormal romance, fantasy has suddenly broken into the horny housewife sphere. So, and that's a fairly large market. So women I believe there's actually statistics that women read more than men. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, they do. They do. There are more women readers than there are men. It's not a massive difference, but it's something like 15-20%, I think.
Right. So, and I think that's important. I think
that could be why fantasy is as big as it is, because women like fantasy and unicorns and rainbows
and unicorns. I disagree. Anyway. I don't think that has any. No, I'm just kidding. No, it absolutely does. The urban fantasy has totally changed the game. And I mean, you're hitting it from both ends, and that's something like that science fiction hasn't done yet. It hasn't hit the young adult market in decades, and it's not hitting any of the other markets to draw people in.
Right, exactly. And I mean, hopefully that'll change about the time, you know, when we write our robot love story, because then you'll have, you know, science fiction romance, and that'll be awesome.
But will we be able to sell it to horny housewives?
I hope so. Because they're a rather large market.
This is true, but our characters likely would never touch one another.
Well, that's probably true.
Anyway, so I guess that's... I mean, we don't have much else to say about this particular topic.
I'm sure we'll have something to say about it in the future.
Yeah, we'll probably have a point we forgot. But point is, fantasy is doing really well. We have no idea why. We spent a half hour talking about trying to figure out why and not coming up with anything.
No, I have no reasons why. Yeah. I just know I like it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's all right stuff.
Indeed.
But I'm skiffy, so I'm a little biased.
And I'm fanty, so therefore fantasy is the shiznit.
Yeah, but you're sort of like the mentally handicapped version of a soda, so...
Thank you so very much. I'm the target market. You know. I am the fanty target market. They should be targeting me.
Oh no, because the market would be all kinds of messed up then.
Probably.
You'd have like crazy raging atheist fantasy tales.
God, I need to write that.
It'd be, you know, there'd be like, it'd
that be would
like
be epic.
It would be like Stalinist Russia, but in Tolkien.
Fantasy? Hells yes. Somebody needs to write that. I will buy it.
That could be the pitch. Stalinist Russia meets Tolkien. There we go. We just came up with the next big fantasy thing. And we'll just put a teenage boy or girl as the head character, sell it to kids. Corrupt them with secret communist anti... Yeah. Anyway.
We'll be on Glenn Beck's show, and then we'll sell a million copies to all the Glenn Beck haters. It's going to be perfect.
Yeah, we're getting really political this episode.
Anyway.
To be fair, I mean, things have been getting really riled up.
Yay, Prop 8! Overturned!
Yay for... Yeah.
2 cents in. Okay.
Just alienate half our readers. This is great.
No on hate. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Prop 8's gone, guys, so that's good news. Anyway, so before we get into more politics stuff, which we should save for a different show, we're going to head off to the naughty music again and then come back to what will be our final moment thing.
That sounds very final.
It will be. It'll be the end. End of all time.
The apocalypse is coming.
Yeah. I just need like a old man voice like Ian McKellen saying that. That would be perfect.
The end is nigh.
The end is nigh, Frodo Baggins. I can't do him. What if? This end the segment, damn it.
Bye, folks.
All right. And we're back with our reading and writing section. This week, I actually writing something.
Yay!
Brand spanking new. That's not old stuff that I'm trying to finish. Oh, it's exciting.
It is exciting.
And it's an idea that I've been rolling around in my head for a while. But something a while ago where somebody had said you could come up with an idea that maybe you could possibly force people to be, like, autistic. Like, you could dumb your brain down to, like... Well, not dumb your brain down, but, like... You reduce your external functioning to a point where you're, like, internalized. And that would... And since autistics tend to... They're able to focus on specific things better than others, depending on the kind of autism it is, obviously. I don't know a lot about it. But that's my idea, is set in a world in which people can now do that. They can force themselves, drop down through the levels, and literally donate their mental capacities to computer systems on on ships and stuff. So I'm not sure where it's going yet. Right now it's something to do with a guy trying to find somebody who doesn't want to be found, and he's literally like running away from people to find this person. So I'm not sure why he's running away yet, but he's hiding in his ship between two black holes. So just the way it opens.
Fancy dancy.
Yeah.
And I'm not writing anything as usual.
I know, but you're barely even literate, so.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, what are you reading?
I am still reading The Years of Rice and Salt by Kim Stanley Robinson.
Okay. Good.
Yes, very, very good. You?
Oh, that was it? Oh, I thought there was like more.
No, I'm kind of slow this week. We've been, you know,
anticlimactic.
I'm sorry. That's all I'm reading. It's sad. I know. Right, I go through phases, so, you know.
Well, this week, I'm kind of running away from all of my schoolwork for a little bit. So I got about 2 weeks before I start teaching again. Taking two classes, which is going to be rough. But so I'm trying to finish The Left Hand of God by Hoffman. And I am still reading Harmony by Project Ito, which I really like Harmony. I'm not sure where it's going yet, but it's really interesting. The world is just this really bizarre future world in which people are... There have been all these plagues and stuff of diseases that have just caused hell on Earth. And so they've invented these administrations which basically control your intake. You make sure that you're vaccinated, that your health is maintained, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's sort of set in this world in which every aspect of your health is controlled. Like, you literally can't go and do stuff like, you know, I don't know if they would let you even jump out of an airplane with a parachute. They probably would think, it's too much of a risk. You can't do that. And it's mostly because there was a virus that killed off so much of the youth. Right. And now they have to protect the youth because the like couple generations they have, that's it.
That's really intriguing. And you need to send that to me when you're done with it. Yeah. Or I will kill you.
Yeah, so that's basically what I'm reading. You're reading one book, which is good.
Yes, it is good. I'm really enjoying it. So.
Yes, you need to read faster, though.
I know, I do.
Yeah. And just remember that when Tara Banks releases her book, we're reading that.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. And if we can find other things that seem like they're going to be horrible, we may read those too. So.
Oh, that's exciting. Send us, like, advice on horrible books.
Yeah, because I don't know what horrible stuff is coming out. So I can only find stuff every so often. So, I mean, if people are coming up with things that I want to know.
If Glenn Beck writes a science fiction novel.
He wrote a book.
It was just like a thriller or something stupid.
But, yeah. Well, that's anticlimactic. Well, I don't know if I could pay money for that.
I couldn't pay money for that, but I'll pick it up from the library.
Anyway, so this sort of kind of leads into our question of the week. We base this question kind of off of the thing we did last week, which was, you know, our favorite movies. And so this week we actually want you to help us with something because we've already lined up a couple movies for this, but we're intending to do a sort of on-off segment where we watch the worst science fiction or fantasy movies, and then we literally just rip the hell out of them. We're just going to talk about those movies. Well, maybe we won't rip out of the hell out of them, but, you know, that all depends on how bad the movie is.
How about there? Does this mean we get to watch the Dungeons and Dragons movie again?
Oh, yes.
You know that's one of the worst.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Creepy bald blue lips, man.
It's very exciting. So what is the worst science fiction or fantasy movie you have ever seen or heard of? Let us know so that we can be tortured by your depravities.
Yeah, there are a couple rules though. Like, we don't want like really obscure movies, like, because it's just got to be something that at least some people might have heard of or would have reasonably have heard of, just because we want these to be, you know,
accessible
stuff,
and preferably stuff that's on either Hulu or Netflix instant streaming or something along those lines,
or at least is easily rentable from like a Blockbuster or something. They can be modern movies, they can be something in the last 30 years, they could be older if necessary. A couple
just not obscure.
Not obscure. Yeah, just something, you know. But we really want your suggestion, because I have not seen every single movie in these genres. I've just
shocking
haven't. Well, I don't have the time. I mean, there's so many.
I know. I'm just teasing you.
It would take me 3 years.
Probably.
I am watching a kind of crappy zombie movie, though.
Which one?
I'm out halfway through. It's called The Zombie Diaries.
Oh. I have not heard of this. It sounds crappy.
It's a brilliant idea. It's just really poorly executed.
Wait, is that the one where people have zombies as servants?
No. Well, I mean, maybe later. I'm only halfway through the movie. It's more set up in sections. The first section is the actual outbreak, and they're single camera stories, documentary style, kind of. Well, yeah, not documentary style, more like home camera style, but higher quality home cameras. So they're not as bad as Cloverfield. And so there's like a section on outbreak. There's a section on scavengers of like people who are just trying to get leftover bits after society has fallen. And then there's a section right now that I'm done with now, which is about the survivors. And then I'm sure there's more after that. But it's just like, it's really poor acting, and it's got such a great idea, but it's not scary.
Huh.
It's just, it's,
well,
it's
like, they're not all. The one I'm thinking of is called Fido, which was actually supposed to be a pretty good movie. And it's, yeah.
Oh, I've never seen that one. I've seen a lot of zombie movies, but yeah.
You might like Fido.
Oh, well, okay then.
I mean, it's like zombies in a 50s sort of gated community.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I might like that. So anyway, so this is a segment we intend to do. It'll be kind of like maybe like in every other episode, maybe something like that. It won't be every episode.
Periodically.
It'll be a periodic thing where we're going to watch a movie, and if we don't die or commit suicide afterwards, we'll talk about it. Yeah, so I'm thinking our first movie that we do, maybe not next week, but the episode after next week, I think we should do In the Name of the King.
Done.
Okay, unless you had one that you had access to quicker, because I know you have Netflix, so I mean, I
want to... Oh, yeah, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Okay, so if we can do In the Name of the King, we will do In the Name of the King next week. Or not next week, excuse me, the week after.
Yes, because next week we might have something special.
We might. We might, unless I explode after I watch that movie again, because I almost ended my life when I saw that movie the first time, just so you all know how bad it is.
Well, then maybe you should wait a week before you watch it again.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch it this weekend, that's for sure.
Just in case we do have something special next week.
Yes. So anyway, so if you want to answer the question, here's how you can do it. You can send us an email at skiffyandfanti@gmail.com. You can send us a voicemail with your hate messages and meanness and all that fun stuff at 206-203-1686, or leave a comment on the skiffyandfanti.wordpress.com. That's our blog page where everything shows up. You should know because you're getting the episodes, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you can send us an at message at twitter.com/skiffyandfanti, assuming you know how to send an at message to us, so if you know what Twitter is. So that's how you can do it, and we would love to... Literally, just seriously, send us your suggestions. Like, torture us. We want you to torture us.
Please. We
and
beg
even if,
you.
Even if you haven't seen them, if you've just heard that it's awful and you want us to watch the
tell you
movie,
how awful it is, yeah.
So you don't have to watch it. We'll watch it for you. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. So that's pretty much the show, guys. We will see you next week. Hopefully, we have something planned for next week that should be very interesting. I'm hoping it'll work out, but we'll see. It's a scheduling issue. If not that week, then we'll at least do it maybe the week after and move something forward. I don't know. We'll figure it out. So, yeah. Any last words, Jen?
Narf.
You're going to leave us with a pinky in the brain quote?
Well, it is pinky in the brain.
If you're going to do that, you need to at least do it with an impression.
Pinky and the brain who want to rule the universe. Just kidding. Bye, folks. Have a great
Bye.
Week.
Bye.
Autobots, roll out!